Begin the current daf Masechta Beya daf Lamed Zayin. Begin on the bottom of the daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, three lines up in the bottom of the Amud, where the Gemara continues discussing the Mishnah from the previous daf. That is, the Mishnah was speaking about the Isuri Rabbanan and those that are what's called Shvusin, that are rabbinic decrees that they're forbidden to be done on Yom Tov and Shabbos. And the Mishnah split up into three categories. Those which are called Shvusin, which are completely Isuri Rabbanan, and there is no trace of a mitzvah of the things that Rabban said they're forbidden, which we explained on the previous daf, going up in the tree, running an animal, and clapping and dancing. These are things that are rabbinically forbidden, as we explained the reason for them. Then the second category the Mishnah spoke about, which is what's called Rishus, as the Gemara on this daf will explain why it's called that term, which, as we had explained in the Mishnah, means to say it's somewhere in the middle. It's not completely voluntary, because it's something that has somewhat of a trace of a mitzvah, but it's not called a mitzvah because it's not a complete mitzvah. And then there's a third category, that of a mitzvah, which is a full-fledged mitzvah, and yet still all these three categories, the Rabbanan said that they're rabbinically forbidden to be done on Yom Tov and Kal Vachomer on Shabbos. Now with that, that's where our Gemara continues, quoting from our Mishnah that said, Ve'elo hin mishum mishus. Now the Gemara continues explaining the second category that we said that these are voluntary in the sense we call it that definition because they're not totally shvus. There's somewhat of a trace of mitzvah to them, but they're not full-fledged mitzvahs, and even this category is forbidden rabbinically, which the first case that was mentioned in the Mishnah was loy danan, that we're not going to go ahead and judge a din Torah on Yom Tov and Shabbos. Now, that the Gemara adds, about mitzvah ka'avid, but there's actually a mitzvah of doing a din Torah, and therefore, why is that called Rishus? Why is this in the second category? This should be in the third category of a full-fledged mitzvah that still you're not allowed to do, but why are we calling it Rishus? Another Gemara answers, Lo tzricha de'ikad de'adiv mene. The reason why it's not considered a full-fledged mitzvah for you to do a din Torah and to be the dayan is because there's somebody better than you. And since there's someone better than you, it's not such a full-fledged mitzvah. It's still a mitzvah. You're fulfilling the mitzvah of having din Torah, but since you're not the best, therefore, we're not considering it a mitzvah gemara, and therefore it's considered in the category of rishus. So therefore, it's in this middle category of that there is still somewhat of a mitzvah, but it's not full-fledged, and yet still rabbinically it's forbidden. The next category was v'loy mekachin. Neither are we allowed to get engaged to a woman on Yom Tov or Shabbos. Now again, the Gemara asks, v'ha mitzvah ka'avad. This is also a full-fledged mitzvah, because the first mitzvah in the Torah, getting married to a woman, is so that one could be have the mitzvah of having children. So why is that called a rishus? It should be in the third category also of mitzvah gemurah. So that the Gemara answers, Lo tzrich, and we continue on top of Lamed Zayin and Aleph. The isla isha banim, he already has a wife and children. And that is either according to Bishameh, which you have to have two males, or like Basil, that you have to have one son and one daughter. Now, therefore, there's no more commandment, a chiv of a mitzvah, to get married, to have children, as the Gemara explains in Masechta Yevamos, Nav Samach Alvan Beis. Now, however, it's still considered a Rishus, which means that there is somewhat of a trace of a mitzvah, because as the Gemara there says, based on the Pasuk in Kehelis, B'beikir Zera Zaracha U'le'erva Tanach Yotcha, one should never stop having children in the appropriate manner because of that one doesn't know who's going to be what, and therefore one should always have that. So it's not a full-fledged mitzvah of Pevri Ebra, but it's still somewhat of a mitzvah, and that's why it's considered a Rishus. The next cases of this middle category of rishus were loy chaltzim lo meyabim, where one can neither do chalitza or yibum, which is the process of when someone has a brother that dies without any children, then there's mitzvah incumbent upon his brother to either do yibum, to consummate that relationship with his sister-in-law, or to do chalitza, not to get married. Now again, the Gemara asks, about mitzvah kovid, this also, why is it in this category of rishus? It's a full-fledged mitzvah, which it says in the Torah, yibum chalitza. And that the Gemara answer is similar to the answer by the din Torah, that there is an older brother. Now, mitzvah gadol, there's a mitzvah by the oldest brother, liyam, to do the mitzvah of yibum, as the pasuk is learned from the pasuk in Devarim Chaf Hei that says v'hoya habachar, that it's really the firstborn that should do it. Now, therefore, it is a fulfillment of the mitzvah, so it's still considered rishus, but it's not a full-fledged mitzvah because ideally it should be the oldest brother. So that's why these are all considered in the category of rishus and not a full-fledged mitzvah, but neither a shvus. Now, however, the Gemara asks, for cooler time in mind, now all these cases that we just spoke about of the middle category of Rishus, so we know why they're Rishus, but why are they rabbinically forbidden to be done on Shabbos and Yom Tov? That the Gemara answers, all of them have the same reason, Gzeres Shem Yichtev, a decree that you might come to do the Melacha Deraisa of Ksiva, where, for example, by judging a court case, you might write down the Psak Din, or by getting engaged, you might write a Shtar Erisin, or when doing Chalitza, you might write the document of the Chalitza, or when one is consummating the relationship with the Yavama of doing Yibim, he might write a Ksuba. So therefore, concerned of doing any of these things, even though they're somewhat of a mitzvah on Shabbos and Yom Tov, because one might come to do Issa Deiraisa, and that's where rabbinically they're forbidden. Now the Gemara goes on to the third category that was mentioned on Mishnah. The Eilehin Mishum Mitzvah, and these things are, although they're full-fledged mitzvahs to be done, but one cannot do them on Shabbos and Yom Tov rabbinically. Le'makdishin, we cannot sanctify things to Hekdish. Le'marichin, we cannot do a valuing of a person based on their gender and their age, which is designated in the Torah, and giving that money to Hekdish. Ve'le'machrimen, and neither can we do charamis, which is when we designate an item as cheim, which stam charamis go to Bedek Abayis. Although they're full-fledged mitzvahs, you can't do that. What's the reason? I think Gemara explains, gzeiro mishum mekach memcha, is a decree of one might come to do business dealings. Now, Rashi has two interpretations. Either that, because this is similar to business dealings, where when you're taking something out of your domain and giving it in someone else's domain, in this case, to Hekdish, and mekach memcha itself is forbidden from a pasuk, which is on some level like biblical, as it says in the pasuk in Yeshaya, mimtzei chevzecha v'dabardab, you can't do your own things on Shabbos and Yom Tov, which means the business dealings. And therefore, this is a gezerah that you might come to do mekach memcha, because it's similar by taking thing out from your rishus and putting in someone else's rishus. Or Rashi says a second interpretation, that actually, as the Gemara says elsewhere, that mekach memcha is itself only rabbinic. Because the reason why business dealings are forbidden, because you might come to write a document when you're selling the item. Now, although that would seem to be a gezerah, because we're saying that you cannot do hektish, because that's similar to Mekhem Emcher, so we're making Gezerah out to Mekhem Emcher, but Mekhem Emcher business itself is only rabbinically forbidden, because then you might come to write something, and then Rashi explains that's not considered Gezerah, it's considered one Gezerah, because actually the Gezerah Mekhem Emcher, which means, say, taking something out of your domain into someone else's domain, included Hektish, taking it out from yours to Hektish, because you might come to write, which they're all one Gezerah, and that's why it's forbidden to be Makdish, Amarach, Amachrim, on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Now, another one of this category of being a mitzvah and still rabbinically forbidden was v'loy magbein trumas amaisus. Now I'll go ahead and take off the tithes and the trumas from something that's tevel on Shabbos and Yom Tov. That the Gemara asks, pshit, it's pretty obvious. It's what's called masak, and you're fixing something. Now, obviously, that would be rabbinically forbidden to be done on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So what's the chiddush of saying that case? So that Tanya Rav Yosef taught that loy nitzucha el litna l'koin b'yam. Actually, the chiddush of this case was, in a case where the person only wants to give the trumas and maisras, the trumas to the kayan, where you could say that it's not so obvious that the person's coming to do tikkun, of being mesakin the tevel, because actually you could say that he doesn't need the leftovers, he's not doing it so he can fix it, that he could eat from it. Just people see that he wants to give a gift to the kayan, and therefore he's taking off the trumas, which is for simchas yom tov, and therefore maybe that would be permitted. That's the chiddush of this case, that still, even though it's not overt, still it would be forbidden to go ahead and take off the trumas and give it to the kayin, even though maybe it wouldn't seem like tikkun, and maybe there would be even rabbinically permitted. That's the chiddush that no, you're never allowed to take off trumas and maisers, even when it would seem possibly that you're giving it just to the kayin. Now, however, v'hanemil, the Gemara qualifies, when did we say that this case of taking off trumas and maisers, taking off the separations of making somebody permitted to eat, that it's us to do that in Shabbos and Yom Tov, that's only peri de tefillah limi etmol. That's only if the produce was already tevel, which means the process was finished from before Yom Tov. I'm a peri de tefillah. However, regarding something that only became tevel on Yom Tov, for example, kagoyin isala frushim in echala, for example, let's say you're making a dough on Yom Tov. So the chiyuv of chala only begins that you have to take off the hafrasha, of taking off the separations, not making this dough as tevel, because you have to give one of the kind of gifts of challah from the dough that only starts now on Yom Tov. Then mefreshinam v'yivin l'kain. Then actually you could take off the separations and give it to the kain, as we're allowed to do other malachas on Yom Tov for Eichel Nefesh. Similarly, we're allowed to do this on Yom Tov to take off the kind of gifts, because the chiv wasn't before Yom Tov, which, as similarly we said regarding Eichel Nefesh, even according to Yehuda, it's only if it could not have been done from before Yom Tov. If it could have been done from before Yom Tov, then we don't do it on Yom Tov. So the same thing would apply to the kind of gifts. But if it only happened on Yom Tov, then you're allowed to go ahead and take it off and give it to the Kayin on Yom Tov. But now the Gemara asks a question on the middle of the three categories that we mentioned in the Mishnah that are Aser Midrabanan. So we defined it that we said Elohim Mishum Mishus. The first category we called these are because of Shvus, totally rabbinically forbidden. Middle category called Rishus, that they're somewhere in the middle. They do have traces of a mitzvah. And the third category called their mitzvahs. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, V'hani mishum Rishus ikka? This middle category of items that we mentioned regarding, let's say, chalitza and yibum, where they're only voluntary things, mishum shvus leka, are they not rabbinically forbidden to be done on Shabbos and Yom Tov? But our Mishnah said, kol shachayovnalav, anything that you're obligated that are rabbinically forbidden on Shabbos, same thing applies to Yom Tov. So therefore we say that all three categories are rabbinically forbidden on Yom Tov. And similarly, the same question would apply, vahani, and these later cases, which we call them, that these are called mitzvah, mishum mitzvah ikka, that there's only a mitzvah to do them on Shabbos and Yom Tov, mishum shvus leka, are they not rabbinically forbidden to be done on Shabbos? But our Mishnah said that all three categories are forbidden. And therefore, what the Gemara's question basically is why did the Tana in our Mishnah go ahead and split up these three categories into different categories? But if they're all, whether the middle or the last one, are also shavus, they're also isur d'abonim. Why are they not being called shavus like the first category, that you can't go up on a tree because you might come to rip up the branch? These are also rabbinical prohibitions to be done in Shabbos and Yom Tov. So they also should be called shavusim. Why are they called rishus and mitzvah? So Mitzvah basically says as follows. It says, loy mi boy yukama. You're right, they're all rabbinically prohibited on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But it's what's called that we wanted to say more chidushim, and that is loy meboy yeshvus gridas d'aser. Not only is the Tana of the Mishnah he's teaching us that something that is only a rabbinic prohibition that and it has no trace of a mitzvah, that why we would say that it should not be prohibited. Not only are those things forbidden on Shabbos and Yom Tov, ela fila shvus d'rishus nami aser. But even the issur d'rabbanan on something that has traces of a mitzvah that we would want to do that, still that's prohibited. And loy meboy yeshvus d'rishus d'aser, and not only are these Isur Drabbanan on these traces of mitzvahs forbidden? But there's even cases when we say that rabbinically it's forbidden to do these things, even though doing these things are full-fledged mitzvahs. In other words, actually it's true. All these things are rabbinically forbidden. Now, the first of the three categories that we said they're forbidden, have no trace of a mitzvah whatsoever. Now, that's why they're called shvusin. The middle category have traces of a mitzvah. Now, so even though they have traces of a mitzvah, now, in the later ones, are full-fledged mitzvahs. And still, in spite of that, these last two categories are going to be rabbinically forbidden. That's what's classically called in the Gemara, loizu avzu katani. That not only the first cases are going to be forbidden, where they're full-fledged isur d'rabbanan, in other words, that one's going to be violating isur d'rabbanan, and even with this aver, he's not going to be fulfilling any mitzvah, that not only there it's rabbinically forbidden, but even the middle cases and the later cases where there are traces of mitzvah, still even over there, it's going to be rabbinically forbidden, and that's why we were calling it these terms of rishos and of mitzvah. Now the Gemara continues explaining our Mishnah, which said, kol elu b'yom tevam. All these halachas were said regarding Yom Tov and Kal v'chaymer on Shabbos, and the Mishnah concluded, and this is what the Gemara's question actually is going to be going on, that ein ben Yom Tov l'Shabbos el oichal nefesh b'lfat. We said there actually is no difference halachically between Yom Tov and Shabbos. The only difference is oichal nefesh, but things that are forbidden on Shabbos are forbidden on Yom Tov. They share the same Yisur Rabban, and that's why all the halachas of our Mishnah apply both by Shabbos and in Yom Tov. Now that the Gemara asks, Rimino, seems to be a contradiction from the previous Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Mishilin, which opened up our parak, Mishilin derech haruva b'yom tov alay b'shabbos. One is allowed to lower produce through the skylight from the roof on Yom Tov, but not on Shabbos. Now, one thing we see is from that Mishnah is that we do make a issur d'rabbanan, a shvus, on Shabbos, which we did not make the gzeira on Yom Tov. So how could our Mishnah come ahead, the next Mishnah, then say that there's no difference in rabbinics between Shabbos and Yom Tov, only eichel nefesh? And therefore they both apply equally, when the Mishnah right before that said there is a difference. Lowering things from the roof is forbidden on Shabbos midrabanan, but not on Yom Tov. So then Rabbi Reza says, Lekash, it's not a contradiction. Because our Mishnah over here that said that there is no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos, which means to say that anything that's rabbinically forbidden on Shabbos is rabbinically forbidden on Yom Tov, which would mean even things that are a loss of money, which was what the previous Mishnah was talking about, that was differentiated between Shabbos and Yom Tov, that for Yom Tov, the loss of money of the produce on the roof was permitted in Shabbos Aser, our Mishnah doesn't make the difference. Israel Lazar is going like Rabbi Lazar, which as the Gemara will shortly illustrate, that he does not permit one to go ahead and bring up an animal and its child on the same day on Yom Tov because of the loss of money that's going to happen by letting it stay there in the pit. So therefore, he's the town of our Mishnah that does not make the differences, even for Hefsid Mammon does not allow one to do Issur d'rabbanan on Yom Tov. Whereas our first Mishnah, the previous Mishnah in the Perek, that said that you could be Mashilin pairs on Yom Tov, but not on Shabbos, and the reason why on Yom Tov you're allowed to is because of the loss of money, is Rabbi Yeshua, as we're going to bring now in the Brisa, that we see Rabbi Yeshua allows things to be done because of a loss of money on Yom Tov, which is not the case on Shabbos. It sounds like we learn a Brisa. Regarding a parent and a child, where it's not permitted to slaughter them on the same day as the Torah says, where they both fall into a pit. Now, one's concerned if they fall into a pit, they might die, there's something, they might get ruined. So Rabbi Eliezer says, so the first end, whichever one you choose, you can elevate, you could bring it out of the pit with the intention of slaughtering it, which are any malachis that are to get the animal to be able to eat the meat on Yom Tov is eich nefesh permitted to do, and then you can slaughter it. But the second one you can't bring up, because you can't go through the tircha and the malachas that are necessary to bring up the second animal, because you wouldn't be able to slaughter it anyway because of eisav es benai. So you leave it there and you try to provide its sustenance over there in the pit, but you can't bring it up. Rishuaimer, he says, no, what you do is as follows. You first take out the first animal with the intention to say, look, I want to slaughter this animal. And then you don't slaughter it. You say, you know what? I don't like this meat. You know what? Then he goes and he uses subterfuge, which means to say he says, oh, and he brings up the second one. He says, oh, you know what? I really want the second one. The second one looks better. Oh, that's the one I'm going to pull out. And then, then he could choose whichever one he wants to slaughter. But using that subterfuge, he's able to go ahead and get it out from the pit and bring it out to the top. Because again, he changes his mind. Now, one thing that we see is that Rabbi Yeshua allows, because of the loss of the money of the other animal, whichever one is stuck there in the pit, to go ahead and do certain leniencies on Yom Tov. So that is the resolution of the contradiction. Our Mishnah that holds is no difference. We don't allow even Hefsid Mammon on Yom Tov, just like it's forbidden on Shabbos, that Ein Bein, there's no difference between the two. Is like Eliezer, as we see that he doesn't let taking out the second animal cause the loss of the money. The previous Mishnah that did make the differentiation and allows pushing down the produce from the roof because of the loss of money to the produce is going like Rabbi Yeshua. Now, that the Gemara asks, only Abaya. Abaya asks and Rabbi Yosef, he says, Mimai, how do you know to make a comparison between that machlekes to say that those are the two opinions of these two Mishnahs? Because Dilma ad kan lo kamer Rabbi Eliezer hasam, maybe over there Rabbi Eliezer said that it's forbidden to take out the second animal. Because el de'afshe b'panasa, because it's not a total loss to money. Because you could do it, although more difficult, and it is a little bit more of a risk, but you could provide the sustenance to the animal. So it's not a definite loss. Aval hacha de'afshe b'panasa loy, but over here where you can't do any sustenance, there's nothing for you to do with all this produce on the roof that's going to get ruined by the rain. Maybe the Rebbe Eliezer would not say that's forbidden, and he actually would allow to go ahead and push it through the skylight. Inami, another reason why you can't necessarily compare it is because ad kan lekam Rabbi Yeshua hasam, maybe only over there did we find Rabbi Yeshua said that's permitted to take out the second animal because el de'efshe la'rume, because it's not overt. It's not obvious that you're going to do something that would seem to be forbidden to save your money, because the one who sees him taking out the first one and then he's going to take out the second one will say, oh, first one probably is lean meat, it's not so good, and he notices that the second one's better. And that's why, since it's not so overt, and therefore you could use subterfuge, maybe there Rabbi Yeshua allows one, because of the loss of money, to take out the second animal. But over here in our case, where it's not possible to use any subterfuge, everybody knows you're not leaving it on the roof. Now, why you're taking it off the roof is only to save all the produce. Now, that would be a zilzil for Yom Tov. That's a disgrace, as we said, why one would not be allowed to do that tircha on Yom Tov. Maybe lie. Maybe actually Rabbi Yeshua would not allow it. And therefore, who said he is the Tana of the previous mission that does allow it? And therefore, the Gemara says you can't compare what Rabbi Yosef is saying, these two Mishnayas, to those two opinions of Elazar and Yeshua. So Elamah, rather, Papa says a different pshat. He says, Leikasha, again, it's not a contradiction, our mission and the previous Mishnah. Because our mission is Bishamai. And Ha Basil, the previous Mishnah, is going like Basil. It's not like we learned the Mishnah that we quoted on that we had on Dafyud Bezim and Alf. Beshameh and Beshameh said that Ein Maitzin, one is not allowed to do Haitzah, to take out Lo Yasaka, not a minor, V'lo Yasalulov, not a Lulov, V'lo Yasefer Torah, and neither a Sefer Torah, L'Rishus HaRabim, from the private domain to the public domain. You're not allowed to carry on Yom Tov even these items, because the only thing that we permitted to do malachas were for Letzarech Echel Nefesh. But things that are not Letzarech Echel Nefesh, you now go ahead and carry them out on Yom Tov. Now, on that, therefore, the Gemara is saying that Rav Papa wants to say that the same thing would apply for the halachas of Muktzah, of moving things that are not necessary. That although there's going to be a loss of money, it doesn't make a difference. Just like Bishame says, you now do Haitzah for things that are not Letzarech Echel Nefesh, so too, you now go ahead and take the produce down from the roof. Because although there's loss of money, still, you're not allowed to move. These things are considered muktzah since they don't have a tzarech v'yamtiv. Whereas the Beis Hillel Matirin, as we said in that Mishnah, the Beis Hillel says it's mutter, that they say that you are allowed to do haitzah, you're allowed to do the malacha of carrying even shaloi letzayrech eichel nefesh, all haitzah is mitayich, since you're allowed to carry for food purposes, you're allowed to carry all these other things too. So therefore, regarding moving items that are not necessarily for Yom Tov purpose either, Beis Hillel also held that it's not going to be a problem of muktzah, and you can move that too. And that's why he says that it's going to be permitted. And therefore, as we said, Beis Hillel is the previous Mishnah, who says you're allowed to lower the produce, because even though it's not for Yom Tov purpose, it's just to save money. But just like with Haitzah, you could do Shalei Letzayach, even for not Yom Tov purpose, so too, even for not Eichel Nefesh, so too regarding moving the produce. Whereas Beis Shammai says that no, you can't do Shalei Letzayach, and therefore you can't move the produce either, Shalei Letzayach. Now that the Gemara asks on this interpretation of Papa, maybe you can't compare our two Mishnahis to that Machlik, Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Because Ad Ken Lo Ka'amri Beis Shammai Hasam, where do we find the Beis Shammai that says that it's going to be forbidden to carry something that's not necessary? That's Ela Ahitza. That's by the Malacha Deraisa of transporting something. Aval Til Til Loid, but maybe regarding the Issad Rabbanon of moving Muksa items, maybe it wasn't so stringent. Maybe actually he's not going to be the Tana of our Mishnah that says there's no difference. Maybe he would agree to the previous Mishnah that says you could lower the produce because it's only rabbinic, and therefore even though you don't need it, maybe he would permit Shalei Letzayach. That the Gemara says no. It actually is like our Papa said, that the previous Mishnah is Beis Hillel and this Mishnah is Beis Shammai, because Atu Tilta Lav Tzar Chatzahu. Now, what do you think the reason why items are Muktzah to move them? And that is the beginning of Haitzah, of taking something out, is moving it. Now, therefore, actually, all the Isra of Muktzah was, because we're concerned that if we allow you to move these things, you might come to carry them in Rosh Hashanah. Now, Rashi says, now if that's the case, how are you allowed to move any utensils on Shabbos? You might come to carry them, and that actually is the case. But since the people would not be able to have Oynik Shabbos or Simchas Yom Tov without using their forks and knives or things that they need, so therefore we permitted them. But things that are not necessary, which is what we call muktzah, they're not necessary and they're set aside, those things are included in the concern that we might come to do haitzah, and that's why they have the isra of tiltal moving them. But however, one thing that we see is that if Beis Shammai does not allow haitzah shalei letzarech, he also, regarding the rabbinic of tiltal, would also hold it's not allowed shalei letzarech, because actually the isra tiltal is tied intrinsic to the isra haitzah, that's why there is an isra tiltal, and therefore it must be that the previous Mishnah is Beis Hillel, that holds that you are allowed to move items shalei letzarech, just like it holds you could even do haitzah shalei letzarech. And our Mishnah holds there's no difference, and you cannot move it. The payers, since there's no tzarech, is like Beis Shammai holds you cannot do haitzah shalei letzarech. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, is talking about the halachas of tchumen on Yom Tov, regarding how far a boundary that is an object, a person has up till 2,000 ames to go within from where its boundary ends. Now, if a person is his self, then it's from his self. If the person's in his house, it's from the end of his house. If a person's in the city, it's the end of the city. But wherever a person's area ends, one can go only on Shabbos and Yom Tov up till 2,000 amos. And that the Gemara relates that to the halachas how they relate on Yom Tov. So the Mishnah begins, Habehema v'hakelim karagli habayim. The person's animals and his utensils have the same halachic status as how far the feet of the owner is allowed to go. And that is, a person cannot transport on Yom Tov, even somebody else, the object owned by somebody, only as far as that somebody, the owner, could have gone. And for example, if a person didn't make an Erev, that would mean 2,000 amos in every direction. If that homeowner went and made an Erev to the north, so then also those objects could only go to the north and not to the south. And that is the halacha of Erev Tchumen, is that if, let's say, a person has from his center, you have 2,000 amos in either direction, north, south, and west, and east. So let's say someone wants to go 4,000 amos on Shabbos, what he can do is he puts an Erev in any direction, let's say north, 2,000 amos away, which would make that the center where he puts the meals, making him at 2,000 amos on one side of that center, which then that center could go another 2,000 amos in that other direction, so that same halacha would apply to his behemah and his kelim. Even moreover, ha'maisa behemtu lebenoyo l'rayv, if someone gives his animal over for safeguarding to his son or to the shepherd, still harei l'karag l'bayim. It still has the halachic status of tchumen for where the owner could go to and not where the son or the shepherd's tchum is for that Shabbos. Now the Mishnah tells us, kelim hamyuchadim le'echad min achen shebebayis. If there are certain utensils, there's a family of people that live in the house, but it's designated for one of the brothers. He's the one that always uses this item. Then harei l'karag l'bayim, then that item has his tchum. However, v'she'in miyuchadim, but if it's not designated for one of the brothers, rather they all use this item. Then hare'elu kamakum shaholchen. Then actually the tchum will be to how far all of the brothers could go to on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and that's how far you could take that keli. And therefore, if let's say one of the brothers actually went and made an Erev to the end of 2,000 Amos to the north, and the other brothers didn't, then he withholds from them from taking it to the south even one step because of his share in that. And therefore, they also will hold it back from him from going to the north, only 2,000 that they're permitted to go. And that is, each one has to be considered, since they're equal partners in this item, it could only be going as far as each one could go. Now, similarly, hashoyel kli mechaver, if someone borrows a utensil from his friend, so it depends when he borrows it, to say what is the definition of the tchum of this item. If he borrowed it mi'erev yom tov, then karagli hashoyel. Then the item has the status for tchumen as how far the borrower could go, because he already acquired the item and from before yom tov, and hence it acquires the shvisa, which is the era of the tchum of the person who borrowed it. But b'yom tov, if let's say he borrows it on yom tov when it's already nighttime, then karagli hamashal, then he'll have the halachic status as the lender, and that is because when Shabbos and yom tov began, it was still by the lender, and therefore it has his tchum. Similar halacha, v'chene isha shesholah mechaverta. If let's say a woman borrows from her friend tavlin spices, let's say when she has to cook something, umayim umelach li'isasa, or water and salt for the dough that she's baking, sahare elu, so both this cooked dish and the dough that she made, kiragli shtein, actually will have the tchum as both women's items. And that is, the woman that's making the dough or the dish can only take it as far as both of them could have gone. And that's because since she borrowed the spices or the water or the salt on Yom Tov, so then that means to say that the spice or the water or the salt, whatever it is that she borrowed, had the shvisa from its original owner, which is as far as she can go. Now, but there's also the other ingredients of the one who's borrowing it. Therefore, there's two different tchumen inside this dish. Therefore, this dish could only go as far as both of these homeowners, as both of these women could have gone. Rabbi Yehuda Paitabimayim, actually, he exempts this halacha regarding water, that it will not take on the halachic tchum definition from the person, from the woman that she borrowed the water from. Because water doesn't have substance. In other words, what it means is it's not recognizable, neither in the dish that you cooked or in the dough, and therefore it doesn't prevent the one who's making that dish from having the tchum, that dish should have the tchum of the one who had the water that it was borrowed from. Now, actually, the Gemara will define this case as talking about a thick dish that was made where it's not watery, so the water is not recognizable. Now, although Rabbi Huda doesn't argue regarding the case of salt, the Gemara will explain that it's talking about a certain type of salt, which is very thick and recognizable, and therefore he doesn't argue in that case. Since it's recognizable, it will have the tchum definition of the person that you borrowed the salt from. But if it actually would be a thin type of salt that is also not recognizable, it would be the same as water and wouldn't have the tchum of that person that you borrowed from. Now the Gemara makes the following diuk. Masnit in our Mishnah that taught one of the halachas was that Hamaisa behemti l'roi b'yamtu. We said if you give over your animal to a shepherd on Yom Tov, so he said harei l'kareg l'bayim, it will not have the halachic status as the shepherd, because although, as we said, if you do it before Yom Tov, then the one that you're giving it over to, it has their kinyan shvisa. But here we're saying that if you gave it to the shepherd on Yom Tov, it will have the halachic status as unto where the owner could go to, not like karagli haraya where the shepherd goes to. And that the Gemara says in Amud Beis, the like Reb Daisa. That would seem that our Mishnah is not like Reb Daisa. The Talmud, because we learned the Brayis Reb Daisa. Omer, he says, some say actually it was Abishol, Omer, it was Abishol that said, halakech behemah mechaveru me'erev Yom Tov. Let's say if someone purchased an animal from his friend on Erev Yom Tov. Now, afa pishle masur le'el b'yom tov, even though he only ends up giving it to him on Yom Tov, what he had purchased from him, but still harehi karagle okech, it still will have the halachic status for its tchum as the purchaser, because although he didn't get it yet, but he had purchased it, and therefore it has his tchum. Now, regarding the next case, the hamaisr behemah l'rayin, if someone gives over his animal to the shepherd, now, afa pishle masur le'el b'yom tov, which is the case of our Mishnah, even though he only gave it to the shepherd on Yom Tov, harehi karagle haraya. So we see that Reb Daisa says it does have the halachic status of tchum as the boundaries of the shepherd, which seems to be not like our Mishnah, which said that if you give it to the shepherd on Yom Tov, it has the halacha of the Bailam, not of the shepherd. Now the Gemara answers no. Afilatem Reb Daisa v'lekashu. You could even say that the town of a Mishnah would be Reb Daisa, and that's not a contradiction. Because Khan, the Braisa that Reb Daisa is talking about is Berei Echad. Where in town, there's only one shepherd. Now what that means is that every person assumes that the tchum, the reshus of the behemoth, will be, it acquires the shvisa of the shepherd. because no matter who it is, the seller, the purchaser, everyone is intending that to give it to the shepherd because he takes care of the animals and he's the only one in town. So obviously we're having it in mind that wherever he's going to go, he's going to take our animals, so therefore it has his shvisa. Khan, however, in our Mishnah was talking about Bishnei Rayim. It's talking about there's two different shepherds. We don't know which one we're going to use on Yom Tov to say that it was intended by the owner to have it by that shepherd. And therefore, it will not have the halacha as a shepherd because you didn't know which one it's going to be. Rather, Karagli HaBailim, if it wasn't given over to the shepherd from before Yom Tov, and that's why it has Karagli HaBailim, but it's not a contradiction. Actually, the Gemara says, Dekinami, it seems to be more precise, this answer that we're saying, that actually our Mishnah is talking about that there's two different shepherds, and that's why you can't say that it's going to be by the shepherd's tchum. The Ketani, as our Mishnah said, that Lebenoi oy l'raya, where if you give it to the son or the shepherd, so Shmamina, obviously that there was a choice of who you're going to give it over to. Now, therefore, since there's a choice, that's why we say it's Karagla Bailam. But if there was only one shepherd, like Abdais is talking about, then of course it would have the tchum of the raya. Now, Amar Rabbi Ruchan Rabbi Yechanan, which relates to the discussion we just had, he says, Halacha Kribdesa. Halacha follows the Kribdesa, again, that it has the halacha of Ragle Haraya. It could go to where the shepherd could go. Now, on that, the Gemara asked, Omir Rabbi Yechanan Hachi, did Rabbi Yechanan really say this? But Vam Rabbi Yechanan Halacha Kistam Mishnah. Rabbi Yechanan always says, Halacha follows like an anonymous Mishnah. That is, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi did that intentionally. He wanted the halacha to be like this opinion, and that's why he said it's Stam without saying who's the author. Now, if it's not, we're learning our Mishnah, which is a Stam Mishnah, doesn't say who said it. It says that the animal and the utensils will have the status of the Ragla Bailam, and not like the Roya that you're giving it over to. So how could Rabbi Yechanan say that Allah is like Rabbi Daisa, if that's contradicted by our Mishnah, and Rabbi Yechanan always says Allah is like Stam Mishnah? I'm about to get more answers. But for Lava Kimna, didn't we already resolve that? Kan b'Roya Echad, the Rabbi Daisa told me when there's one shepherd, that's when Rabbi Yechanan says Allah is like Rabbi Daisa. Kan, our Mishnah is told by Bishnei Rayim that when there's two shepherds and then the halacha is like our Mishnah, where then we don't know who it's going to go to, and that's why it's Karagla Bailam. Continue on these halachas, the Gemara says, turn by and learn the Brisa. Shnaim Shesholu Cholok Echad Bishutvis. If there's two people that borrowed an article of clothing in a partnership, and that is from before Yom Tov, they went to this person, it says, we want to borrow it, we both want to use it over Yom Tov. This one wants to go in the morning, Yom Tov in the morning, Lebes HaMedrash. He wanted to go to learn in Bes Medrash, and he needed, let's say, this shirt, this coat to go. And this one had a different event in the evening of Yom Tov, Lebes HaMedrash, they had to go to a certain party. Now, they both had to go at a different time. So he said, look, we need to borrow your coat. Let's say it's cold outside. We want to borrow it. He's going to use it in the morning. I'm going to use it in the nighttime, both on Yom Tov. The Braisa continues with the case that Ze'er v'lov letzafen. One of them, he had to go very far, let's say, to the base of Medrash. So he made his Erev that he could take this chaluk, this clothing, to the north. That's how he made an Erev Tchumen, so he can go even further than normally. The Zeir of Ladram, actually, this one who had the party, he had it further in the south, more than 2,000 Amas. So he made an Erev Tchumen so he can go further. Now, therefore, the Braisa concludes as follows. Zesh Erev Lav Latzavan, this one who made an Erev to go to the north, Mahalach, he can go, and he could take this clothing with him, only Litzafin Karagli Misha Arva Lav Ladam. He can only go that far to the north, as far as the other person who made an Erev actually to go to the south. In other words, how far that person could go to the north, who he was intending to go to the south, which makes his Tchum less towards the north, because he moved it over more towards the south, as we explained the mechanics of the Erev Tchumen. That's only how far the one who made the Erev to the north can go to the north. He's limited to how far the other guy could go. Vizesh Erev Lav Ladam, and similarly the one who made the Erev to the south could only give Mahalach Ladarm, correctly Misha Erev Lav Latzav, and he could only go to the south as much as the person who made the Erev to the north, which allows him to go more to the north, but limits him in the south. That's how far the one who made to the south can go to the south, which is even less than normally, even without making Erev to the south. As, for example, if let's say the case is talking about where they both put their Erev 1,000 Amas away from where they actually are. This one does it to the north, that it can go 3,000 Amas to the north because he's moving over his boundary, as we explained, where you put the Erev, the meals, that designates your center of where you are for that Shabbos and Yom Tov. Hence, that's 2,000 Amas in either direction. So if you put in 1,000 Amas north from where you are, which means that you can then go 3,000 Amas from where you are now and only 1,000 to the south. And the other one made it 1,000 to the south so that he can go 3,000 Amas to the south. Now, that is what we're saying, that each one would only be able to go now 1,000 Amas from where they are. They both actually are worse off than they were before. Before they were able to both go with that chaluk, 2,000 Amas in either direction. Now that each one made an Erev 1,000 Amas away in opposite directions, which means, say, in the other direction, they can only go 1,000. Now, both are limited by each other, as we explained before, because since they're partners, each one has a share in this object, and this object takes on the tchum of both of them, which limiting both. Now, actually, v'imitzu es tchum, if by virtue of making their ev tchumen, they now cut the tchum exact, in other words, the tchum of Shabbos, as we explained, from north to south, gives you 4,000 amas. Half goes to north, and half goes to south. Now, if they each made their Erev Tchumen exactly 2,000 amas away in opposite directions, which comes out that each person could not have gone in the other direction, not even a footstep, because he's at the edge of where his Erev is, which allows in that direction, then Hareza lo yizazen memkayim, and then actually neither of them can move this shirt, this coat, not even a drop, not to the north, not to the south. Because the northern one doesn't allow the southern one to move even a drop, and the southern one doesn't allow the northern one to move even a drop, because each one made his Erev 2,000 amas away, and therefore, because we said that each one is invested in this object, it takes on both tchum, and both tchum was only allowing it the other direction, hence it can't go a drop from where it actually is. Related to this discussion, the Gemara says, Itma, we learned, Shnaim Shalakhu, two people that purchased from before Yom Tov, something that they wanted to split on Yom Tov. Now, chavis ubehema b'shutvis, they had taken a partnership with a barrel of wine and an animal. So that thing where brings a machlekes regarding how do we define their tchumen. Rav Amar, he says, chavis muteris. Actually, the barrel of wine is permitted for each one to take his portion of the wine wherever he made the Erev. So let's say one person made 1,000 amas south and one made 1,000 amas north. He can go 3,000 amas to the north. He can go 3,000 amas to the south. And each one will not limit in the case of the barrel of wine. However, the animal will be forbidden to take it only as far as the other one could have gone. Whereas the Shmuel Amar, he says, no, chavas name asura. Even the barrel is going to be forbidden. And the reason is because he holds ein brera. You can't go ahead and retroactively say that, oh, this was my part of the animal and this was your part of the animal. Neither can you say that by the barrel of wine, because could be, since he doesn't hold the yesh brera to say that retroactively is clarified, maybe actually the wine that I'm taking was your part of the wine, and you're taking my part, and therefore you're limited to where I can go, and I'm limited to where you could go. So therefore both the barrel and the animal, because you don't say retroactive clarification, can only go up to where each one of the partners could have gone. Now, that the Gemara asks, so we understand Shmuel. He holds ein brera, but my ksav Rav. What does Rav hold that he differentiates between the cases? And that is iksav yesh brera, if he holds that there is yet retroactive clarification, and that's why he holds by the wine, I can go wherever I can go. You could take your part of the wine wherever you want to go. But then afilu behemat tishri, then even the animals should be permitted, because we say retroactively clarified the parts of the meat that I got were really my parts of the animal, and you got your parts. Hence it has my tchum, and yours has your tchum. So why is there its aser? And the iksav ein brera, if he holds that, no, you can't say retroactively clarified that was your part and that was my part, and that's where the animal is forbidden, then even the barrel should also be forbidden. Why there does he say that each one could take it up to where his tchum is by the barrel of wine? So the Gemara answers, actually, Rav holds that there is retroactive clarification. And that's why the barrel of wine is permitted, because it comes out that retroactively when we take your half and you take your half, that it was yours and that was mine. And that's why it has my tchum and yours is your tchum. But v'shani behema, an animal is different, because the animal was alive, bein hashmashes, which is when the definition of the tchum happens. Now, each limb, when it's alive, gets nourishment from the other limb. It's all the homeostasis of the animal. Everything is nourishing. It's all connected in the animal. Now, therefore, once it was already getting dark on Yom Tov, that means each limb was nourishing from the other one, and therefore you can't say yesh brera. You can't say yours was mine and mine was yours. Because actually, the different limbs of the animal, which have different tchumen, are nourishing from each other, and therefore that means each part of the animal is limiting the other, because it's actually getting from the other. And therefore, since it has from the other, which has that limited tchum, that means even the other ones have that limited tchum, and that's why, although we say yesh brera, the animal is different, because it's all connected and it's getting from the other ones, that's limited to the tchum of the other half. Now, that the Gemara asks, Amalei Rav Kahana, Rav Asil Rav. These two Amaram asked on Rav, wait a second, Le'issa Muktza Le'chashashu, regarding the Issa of Muktza, for that we're not concerned about. And that is, we definitely could testify that each one of these people, regarding the animal, they didn't have in mind from the other person's portion. And that is, however, in spite of the fact, you're agreeing, it seems that everyone would agree that if you want to eat it over here, not take it, let's say, beyond the tchum, but if to eat the animal right here, No one would say that my half of the animal is forbidden because of your half of the animal. To say that, wait, but each part of the animal nourishes from the other part, and you should say mukta, because that means the mukta, I mean, I didn't have a mind to ever have your part. You didn't have a mind to my part. We knew we were going to split it. Yet still we don't say that yours, which is mukta to me, because I didn't have a mind yours, should make my half mukta because it's yonki mehadadi. So then le'isut chumin, so regarding to saying how far each one could take for his boundary, of how far he could take it on Yom Tov, for that chashashu, for that you're going to say that it's going to be usher because of that my half nourished from your half. But if you have to be concerned for that, then you should say the same thing regarding mukta, that even over here, forget about how far you could take it, you should not even be able to eat this meat on Yom Tov, that you have a shared partnership. Because I didn't have a mind, for me it was only prepared my half, not your half, and therefore your half is mukta to me. But if I'm nourishing from the mukta, that means even my half is mukta. So why do you agree that there's no problem of mukta, but there's a problem of tchumen? So the Gemara says a shasag Rab. Rab was quiet. He didn't answer that question. It seemed to be a good question regarding why is it any different that we don't say it's mukta from his half, but yet tchumen we do say there's a problem of tchumen from his half. So now the Gemara concludes my havalah. So what was the final psak on this question that we had regarding two people that purchased before Yom Tov partnership of a barrel of wine and an animal? What will be the tchumen on these items? So the Gemara brings the machlekes from Hayshi Ami Yeshbir. He says that there is retroactive clarification, and therefore actually both the animal and the barrel will be permitted because we say retroactively is clarified, this was my half and that was your half, and therefore that could be for my tchum and that could be for your tchum. Rabbi Yechon says, no, there is no retroactive clarification, and therefore actually they're both going to be forbidden because like Shmuel said, whereas Rabbi Hayshi says they're both going to be permitted. Now that the Gemara asks, does Rabbi Hayshi yesh breira? Does Rabbi Hayshi hold yesh breira? And that is, one thing we see clearly is that there shouldn't be a difference between, as Rav said, between the chavis and the behemoth. Because either you say yesh brer or you say ein brer. To say that yonki ma'adodi, then you should say the same thing even regarding muktzah. So we have this machlik, it's regarding if both are permitted or both are forbidden, if you say yesh brer, ein brer. Now, the Gemara had said, Rabbi Yehoshua is the one that says yesh brer. That the Gemara asked, but now we learn the Mishnah Masechtas Alus, which at length we have we explained this Mishnah in the first parak. The Mishnah says, hames bebayis. If there's a dead person in a house, which is what conveys tumas oil to whatever is inside that area, v'loy psachem harben, there's also many entryways, many doorways for this oil, for this tent, for this house, for this room. Kulan tumeim, all the doorways even have the tuma of oil. Now, that's only because we're not sure which one it's going to go through. And therefore, that's the halacha, that the place where it's going to be taken out of from, that doorway also has a tuma. However, niftach echad mehem, if one of the doorways are open, so who tameh the kulan turn? Actually, then only that one is tameh, but all the matar, because once we know which one is going to be, then that's the only one that has the tameh, because it's, the doorways actually are not part of the aisle. It's only because of that you're going to take it out from there, and since we don't know which one, they're all tameh, but when we know which one of them is open, that one becomes the one that's tameh, and all are tahar. Now that, the Mishnah continues and says, chishib lohitzi b'achmen, if let's say you just thought about which one you want to take the corpse out from. Or even if it's just a window that's 4x4, so that doorway, that window, once you think that I'm going to use that one, that now saves in all the other ones that, again, they will not transmit tumma to what's in the airspace of those doorways or those windows, that only that one, now that you thought about it, will convey as the one that you can take him out from, and therefore that's the one that becomes tumma. Now, on that halacha, there's a machlikas in that Mishnah. They say, but it's only if you thought about it before the person died. Then that becomes the one, say, hey, if he dies, we're going to take him through this. So already has that status now. Now when he dies, this is the one we know we're going to take him out from. That's the plan already. So that's the only one that becomes tameh. No. Even after the person died, still your thought about, hey, I want to use that one to get him out, will designate that one as the one to save all the other ones and not being tummy. Now, v'idmar law, regarding this opinion of Beis Hillel, we had learned that Amr Rav Hayshia said that this Beis Hillel says that even after the person died, if you think, so that helps latar as a pesachim, that helps to say that the kalim that are there by the entryways will be tahar, is only mekanu laba. That's only from here on. And that is from after that you think about it, then we're saying that the ones that you're going to put now in the other doorways, they're not going to become tameh, only the ones by the one that you're ultimately going to take them out of from, because you decided now, will become tameh. Where the diak is, the inference is, mikan al-aba'in. that only from here on, let's say the person died 5 hours ago, and there were kalim by all the doorways. Now, whatever is from here on that you're going to put now by the other doorways, they will not become tame. Only the one that you thought, oh, hey, that's the one we're going to use. But lemafrei aloi, but retroactively, regarding the utensils that were there for the past 5 hours since he died, that we will not say that they're going to be tahar. In other words, we don't say breira that, oh, now that we decided 5 hours after the person died, retroactively was clarified that even before he died, that was our intention, which is what breira would say. And therefore, even what was there in the past 5 hours should be now retroactively clarified as tar, not tummy, because that was not the door we were going to take it out from. And that Rav Hashia doesn't say that. He says they will be tummy. So obviously, Rav Hashia holds aim brera. So how could he say over here in this halacha of yesh brera that we say retroactive clarification, this was my half for tchumen, this was your half for tchumen, when he says clearly in the explanation of the Mishnah in Alis that we do not say brera, and it's only from here on the Bishil holds what you're going to put there will be tahar, but not what was in the past. David the Gemara answers, Epoch. Actually, we have to switch the first statement of Rav Hashia. And that is, Rav Hashia Amar Einbrer. Regarding our machlekes in regarding Tchumen of the barrel and the animal, Rav Hashia is the one that says we do not say retroactive clarification. Actually, both are going to be Aser, and it's Rabbi Yechon Amar Yeshbrer. It's actually Rabbi Yechon that he holds that we do say retroactive clarification. And it's Rabbi Yechon that says both are going to be permitted for each other's Tchumen. Now, that the Gemara asks on that. Does Rabbi Yechon hold a brera that he would say this? Yes, brera. But v'am Rabasi am Rabbi Yechonon ha'achet shechalku, brothers that are splitting up parts of the Yerusha, of the inheritance of their father. So Rabbi Yechon says lekuchesin, they have a status as people that are buying it from each other. As if we look at the estate as items that are being sold, and each brother is buying from each other. And therefore, Machzirin Zel Zel B'Yevel. Actually, when it comes to Yevel time, they have to re-split it again. They have to give it back to the owner, so to speak, and then purchase it back. In other words, what that means is Rabbi Yechon essentially is saying that we don't say that Breira, that retroactively was clarified, that each one took what inherently was his inheritance. And therefore, a Yerusha doesn't go back on Yevel. This is my Yerusha. But we don't say that. We say that maybe actually what I ended up taking was really yours, not mine. And therefore, what essentially was that we were swapping portions in the Yerusha. Hence, it's like I purchased, that's what bartering is. Bartering is a type of purchasing that I took yours and you took mine. And therefore, when it comes time for Yevel, which is the halacha by anything that's sold, has to be then given back because it has to go back to the rightful owner. And therefore, Rabbi Yechon says, every 50 years, you have to go back and give back the Yerusha because it has halachic status like Lekuchas. Now, one thing we see from this halacha is Rabbi Yechon does not hold of Yesh Breira. Because if we hold of that retroactively, this is clarified that this is really what was supposed to be yours and that was what was supposed to be yours, then they wouldn't have a status as Lekuchas. They would have a status as Yerushim, which each one gets to keep his Yerusha forever, not having to give it back to his brother that maybe yours is mine and mine is yours, and therefore we bartered and therefore we swapped it. And therefore, how could we say Rabbi Yechon is the one that says Yesh Breira if we see he says Ein Breira? Now the Gemara says, now, v'chitem, if you're going to say that it actually could be Rabbi Yechon that says Yesh Breira, because ki les le Rabbi Yechon and Breira, when does he not hold a Breira, as in he just in this previous statement? That's b'day Raisa, by things that are biblical. In other words, to stand in the place of something that's biblical, for example, the halacha of Yevel, which is a biblical halacha, and that we do not rely on Breira. And that's why he says that you would have to give it back every 50 years. But by rabbinic halachas, which is what we're discussing in our sugya regarding the halachas of tchumen, which are just rabbinic, there is lay. Maybe over there he would rely on breira, and therefore the barrel and the animal would be permitted in each one's tchum, because it's only rabbinic, and therefore we would rely on breira. Now, if you're going to see such a thing, on that the Gemara says, but ubirabonami is lay? Can you even say that by rabbinic law that he does rely on breira? But Vatani Aya had taught, that's the name of a sage, that Rabbi Yehuda says as follows. In Odom Masna Ashnei Dvarm Kechad, Rabbi Yehuda holds that you cannot make a condition regarding two things at the same time, which the Mishnah of Masechet Erevin explains as follows. Where the Mishnah there says that a person can make a Tanai with his Erev Tchumen. And that is, a person is only allowed to go, as we explained, 2,000 Amos in any direction. But let's say he doesn't know where he wants to be. So then the Mishnah there says he can make two Erev Tchumen and make a condition where, let's say he heard that there's going to be a Talmid Chacham that's coming somewhere near his city within 4,000 Amos. And he's going to give a lecture for the people. Now, I can't go 4,000 Amos. I can only go 2,000. But if I make an Erev, I can go 4,000. But he doesn't know if he's going to be 4,000 Amos to the west or to the east. So he says as follows. He says, look, if the Chacham is going to come to the east, let my Erev I'm making to the east be what's going to acquire my Shvisa, that should be my considered my place of residence. If he comes to the west, let my Erev to the west work and acquire my place of residence. If he comes to either one, let's say there's two Talmidei Chachamim, then let me choose whichever one I want to tomorrow, and then I'll decide which one I want to go to. And that is, let my Erev of Bein HaShemashes essentially be acquired retroactively when I decide on Shabbos. Now, that's only possible if you hold to the concept of Breira, where when you choose tomorrow, then you say that retroactively was clarified that by Bein HaShemashes, by twilight of Friday night, that was what my intention really was. Now, that is what the Yehuda comes to argue on that opinion of that Mishnah Masechet Zeirvin, and to say that, no, you can't make a condition when there's two other lecturers that are coming, two Talmidei Chachamim, to say that tomorrow I'm going to choose which one, to say that, oh, then I'll say that which Erev was the one that I wanted that retroactively was going to be my Erev Bein HaShemashes, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that we do not say Breira retroactively to clarify which one was the Erev you wanted to make. Ella, but Ayah does say that Rabbi Yehuda holds in Bo Chacham LeMizrach Eruv LeMizrach. You could say that if the sage is going to come, which we're talking about one Talmid Chacham, not two lecturers, there's one, you could say that, it. Look, if he's coming to the east, let it be to the east that I can go the 4,000 Amas to get to him on the east. L'mayiv, if he's coming to the west, let it work, the Erev that I'm placing conditionally on the west, that if he's going to come to the west, because I don't know which direction he's going to come to, there you could make such a Tanai. But for Ilakan Lakan Loi, but if there's two people, and either direction, that you cannot do. Now, the Gemara continues on top of Lamachasim and Alav, Vavinaba. Now, we had asked regarding this halacha that I was saying in the name of Yehuda. That is because the Gemara assumed that what this case of the second part of Yehuda's statement was talking about was because sometimes the Talmid Chacham will only be coming within 4,000 Amis after Bein HaShemashes. How's that possible? So, for example, let's say when it got dark on Friday night, he was within the Tchum of the Beis HaMedrash. So he was within 2,000 Amis of getting to within 4,000 Amis of the other person, but when it was Bein HaShemashes, he wasn't there yet. Or let's say he was within 4,000 Amas, but he recognized a tree or a wall, which the Gemara Masechet Zeirvin explains that you could say, I want my Shvisa to be under there, where then he could even go 4,000 Amas when it's nighttime. So therefore, what comes out is that when this person wants to make his Erev acquired to go, let's say 4,000 Amas, let's say the shul where the Talmid Chacham is going to be lecturing is 4,000 Amas where he is. You can't go 4,000, only 2,000. But if you make an Erev, you can go 2,000 Amas to the Erev and then 2,000 Amas to where the Beis Medrash is. But the Talmid Chacham had not even gotten there by Bein HaShemashes. He only comes later, as we explained, because he himself was within the Tchum of that Beis Medrash. Now, that is what the question the Gemara had asked, is that who said that that Erev could acquire retroactively? In other words, maybe the Talmid Chacham Bein HaShemashes was not intending to come here, but rather he was coming to come to another place. And therefore, how could we rely on Breira to say that, oh, retroactively, wherever he decided to come, within 4,000 Amas, that's where I wanted that my Erev should acquire it for, but that would be considered Yesh Breira. And therefore, what the Gemara's question was Maishna Lekan Ulekan Deloi, what's the difference when there's two Talmidei Chacham? Where then we say, no, you can't do a condition that if one's coming to the east and one's coming to the west, then tomorrow I'll decide which Erev should work, because that would be Yesh Breira, and we do not hold Yesh Breira, because the Ein Breira, so Mizrach Marev Nami Ein Breira, then even when there's one Talmid Chacham, but I'm not sure when he's coming to within 4,000 Amas of my city. I'm not sure if he's going to go to the Beis Medrash to the west or the one to the east. And therefore, then I do allow. But if we hold Ein Breira, what's the difference in retroactively clarifying it in that case or when there's two Talmidei Chacham? And on that, Vamar Reichen had said to answer that, he says, actually, he's talking about Ukvar Bo Chacham. The sage had already come when it was by Bein HaShemashes. And that is when Yehuda said that if the Chacham is coming to the east, let it be to the east, or if he's coming to the west, let my other Erev I'm making to the west work, he was making the condition on this one Chacham was that the Chacham actually was there by twilight. The only thing was that this person just didn't know. It was a lack of knowledge. And therefore he's saying, whichever direction he's going to be in, let my Erev in that direction acquire. Now, that acquisition of the Erev will not have to work based on Breira. Rather, it will be a real kinyan by Bein HaShemashes. It's just that I don't know which one it was that was working. So tomorrow I'll find out which direction he came, and that's going to be the one that I had said should work, and it did work by Bein HaShemashes. Now, that was how Rabbi Yochanan had resolved that contradiction, because actually it's not working on the principles of prayer. Now, that the Gemara asked, when the fact Rabbi Yochanan had to explain that case of Yehuda, when the Chacham had already come. So obviously, Amal Lesler B'Yechon Breira. Obviously, B'Yechon does not hold of Breira, even by a case where that is talking about by Tchumen, which is rabbinic. And therefore, we can't even answer that, oh, you're right. Rabbi Yechon, as we demonstrated by the halacha of the Yershim, where they're like Lekuchas, that he doesn't hold of Breira. That's by Deiraisa. But we said, but maybe by Drabana, which is the case we're discussing in our sugya of the Chavis and the Behema, there he would hold that yes, Breira. Where you can't say that, because we see even by Rabbanans, by the case of Tchumen, he holds Ein Breira, where we don't say retroactive clarification. And that's why he had to say that the Chacham was already there. There was just a Gilu Milsa Ba'alma. So the Gemara goes back to what it initially had as the Girsa. Actually, don't switch it. Rabbi Yishu was the one that said yes, Breira. Now, the question was, but Rabbi Yishu himself had said in the explanation of the Mishnah Masechtas Alois that to purify the entryways of that oil is only from here on. But if he holds a yes, Breira, you should say that it works even retroactively. And that the Gemara says, V'chiles Rabbi Yishu Breira b'day Raisa. When did Rabbi Yishu not hold a Breira of retroactive clarification? That's by a biblical halacha. For example, by halacha of Tumas Mes, where there he doesn't hold a Breira. Because this halacha of that it's going to convey tumah by the entryway where it leads from, that's a halacha l'mesh mesina, as the Gemara Masechtas says in Masechtas Sukkah and Avav, that the halachas of tumah are halacha l'mesh mesina, which that includes this halacha of where you take it out from. Regarding that, he holds that you cannot say it will work retroactively. Abu Rabban, but regarding rabbinic halachas, for example, the halachas of tumah, which is what we're discussing in our sugya about splitting up this jug of wine and of the animal, Islay, there he would hold of that halacha. And actually, the Gemara concludes, Darj Mazutra. Mazutra had expounded halacha kibbeisha, halacha vaz kibbeisha, that we do not say Breira by biblical halachas, and therefore that was the halacha he said regarding the oil mess. However, we do say Breira regarding rabbinic halachas, and that's regarding the chavis and this behema, when they finally do split on Yamtiv, we will say that it is Breira that retroactively clarified that this was my half, therefore goes to where my tchum could go all the way to the end, and your half goes to where your could go because of the principle of yesh Breira by Rabbanan.